This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
On November 2nd of 2016, 34-year-old Sherry Papini vanished while jogging near her Redding, California home. 22 days later, she reappeared 150 miles away, emaciated, bruised, and branded. Yes, branded with a branding iron. It actually used to be a wood cutting or wood burning tool, but it worked. Claiming that she'd been kidnapped and tortured by two masked Hispanic women who planned to sell her into sex trafficking. It was all an elaborate hoax, though. For 6 years, Papini maintained her story while law enforcement wasted countless resources searching for these fictional kidnappers. The truth? She had been voluntarily staying with her ex-boyfriend, whom she'd contacted, claiming her husband was abusing her. She purposefully lost weight, cut off her own hair, and created her own injuries, allegedly. Arrested in 2022, Papini was sentenced to 18 months in prison and ordered to pay over $300,000 in restitution. But even now, she is changing her story again, claiming that in 2025, in this new documentary, that she really was kidnapped just by her ex-boyfriend instead of the two Hispanic women. This is a story of a woman whose lies created a media frenzy, destroyed her own family, and consumed investigators for over half a decade. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, joining us to discuss this case. We're going to watch a clip of Sherry here in a moment, just as she introduces the case, introduces why she's doing this documentary. It's called Sherry Papini, Caught in a Lie. It's on Investigation Discovery or HBO right now. You just got done watching it. Just overall, 10,000-foot overview. What was your reactions?
I thought it was well done. Mm-hmm. I think they tried to come at it from various angles. And it's given us a lot to talk about with psychology and the mind and self-serving behavior and different types of personality disorders. There's a lot there.
There is a lot here. And pieces of this thing, you almost kind of go, oh, well, maybe she is telling the truth. But how do you really even know? Let's begin. We're going to take a look at just kind of how this whole documentary starts. This is from, like I said, Sherry Papini, Caught in a Lie. Watch the whole thing on ID and HBO. This is her setting up the scene for the doc.
Oh. Oh, my God. So the story that the world thinks they know is that I am a master manipulator who's fooled everyone. That's my magic wand. Sorry. I'm going to do ridiculous things because some of this is ridiculous. The Sherry Papini that's out there, it's not me. She's not real. It's just this version of me that has been created to fit the narrative for the media's version of what happened. I've gone from teenage sex worker to criminal mastermind to master manipulator. I poisoned my children. Liar, cheater, criminal, whore. There's this version of the story of, oh, you're only talking now because you got caught. And also, thank God, it's about time. I'm so f***ing tired of keeping the secret and living the lie. Now I get to tell the truth. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Yeah, that's how it all begins. There's a lot to unpack there, just in her erratic personality, her statements that she's making, the media's version of the story, contrary to her telling a lie for 6 years. What'd you get there as you opened up the book on Sherry Papini and the stock?
She sure got a dramatic flair, doesn't she?
Just a little. Yeah. She knows how to work a camera now, doesn't she?
She does. She does. And it reminded me of one of the documentaries recently with Karen Reed, where it's like, now I'm taking control here. Mm-hmm. This is going to be my truth, my way.
Yeah, it's what happens when you do a personality about someone with a likely cluster B personality disorder. It's like, this is what you get. And they all follow the same pattern. I've been saying that for a long time, and everyone who does it knows it. It's like, yes, they're following the same playbook. You will see elements of Karen Reed in this, in terms of just personality, framing the stories to fit a specific narrative. Let's play some more. We got a lot to go through here. This is just a short clip where she kind of sets it up, trying to basically bring people in with her because she lied about all of this, of being kidnapped, of being branded, of being abused, of all these horrible, horrible things, blaming these two Hispanic women that did not exist, and then lying to her husband for 6 years while she's with the kids that this all happened and she's this victim of this horrible kidnapping, but tries to pull it all down into a nice little basket and say, well, have you ever lied? Like it's anywhere near the same. Let's take a look at this.
Haven't you ever lied? Have you ever lied in your history of existence? And then has that lie been blown up and broadcasted around the world? It's so much more complex than just pointing the finger and saying, you're a liar. And I wish more than anything I could have been more truthful.
It's one of my favorite things with folks like this, the narcissistic borderline types, where they like to add a little crackle to their voice with no tears and be very dramatic about anything that happens around them. Because maybe someone will believe. Because people do. People are People are dumb.
Yeah. Those big eyes.
With big eyes, people are very susceptible to having pity for people that seem that they deserve pity. And there are plenty of people that do deserve pity, who've gone through a lot of stuff, and they deserve some attention and help. This is not one of them. What was your take on what is she doing there? What is she, is it from a psychological standpoint, what is she trying to set up?
I think her narrative, again, that she is a victim, and hasn't everybody lied at some point? It's very manipulative, and you get that from the get-go here, and it continues throughout the entire show.
Yeah, it very much does. Well, an interesting thing to me about this story is after she had come back home, she's with her husband again for about 6 years, and they think, or he thinks life is good, but he's catching her in lies and such. And eventually, it starts to go a little haywire, and he kicks her out. She ends up going and living with his sister. So what would have been her sister-in-law while she was married to him. I found that dynamic rather bizarre. Let's take a look at this and kind of understand what is going on here, why this happened, because I think there's some interesting things here with the sister, too. Like, why are you taking this person in? I mean, this is your brother who supposedly had all these things happen. Anyway, let's watch and we can talk on the other side here.
It's so painful to watch that, how humiliating it is, and it being made such a spectacle. Keith wasn't around. I was surprised at that and also sad. I was sad for both of them. I was sad that Keith felt that he didn't maybe want to be there, and the way that he was protecting himself was to just be separate and push her away. After I was released from jail, my stuff was put in trash bags. So basically, he said, I don't want to look at her. I don't want to talk to her. I'm not going to answer the phone. And then I don't know exactly how it got figured out. I just know that there was conversation about where she might live. I just volunteered to have her live with me. It's like she can be with me. I knew that it was possible that she could be lying, but it still was like really terrible things happened to her. I don't need to believe anyone to believe in them.
this is a woman who needed help and she needed love and she needed an atmosphere where she could feel safe and where she could be protected and where she could be listened to. So it turned out that she moved in with me.
Okay. Ooh, I feel like these are big ones. I feel like these are necessary big ones.
Yeah, they're big ones.
Okay. I loved it. I got to have an experience with someone who felt like a sibling in a way that I hadn't had before. I'm not close with my brother. I don't know Keith very well as an adult. We don't have a lot of connection. We haven't had a lot of connection, regardless of what has gone on with he and Sherry. Keith and I just haven't been close for a very long time. With Sherry, we just were able to share in ways that I didn't have before, and it was really exciting to have her around.
She took me in. And during that time, I shared custody with the kids, and they were so happy.
It's a bizarre dynamic that is certainly mm-hmm. going on here. I mean, on the surface to me, it's like, okay, these are two people who have some serious needs that need to be filled mm-hmm. and they're filling them for each other,
yes.
but they're both very selfish needs, it seems.
Yes.
Give me
yes.
your thoughts from a psychological
yeah,
standpoint.
There's definitely a mutual click between the two of them where, you know, the sister says, you know, she may not be telling the truth, but that doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of neediness does she have that Sherry can just kind of pop into her home like that? And now they're sisters mm-hmm. and now they've got this great relationship. And it also speaks to ongoing problems in Keith's family, you know, that this would be the way that this would fall out. Mm-hmm. It's unusual.
Yeah. I found all of it just very strange. And we'll continue to see this turn up as we continue to work through the clips here. But there is an ongoing seeming shock that Sherry has that her husband, after finding out she's been lying about the whole thing for 6 years to his face, his reaction was, "You're not going to be near the children and your stuff is in trash bags. Have fun. Bye-bye." Mm-hmm. That's not a horrible reaction to have. That's called protecting your kids. That's called protecting yourself. That's not a screw you, Sherry, and then, oh, right. how could you do that to this woman? No, this mm-hmm. woman was doing horrible things to her family mm-hmm. mentally for all mm-hmm. those years. The best thing you can do is get away from mm-hmm. her and keep your children at bay because you don't know what this person is capable of.
Right. It's out of the norm of how you would deal with, what would you call it? The shared joint custody. Mm-hmm. Let's make our family work, even though mom and dad aren't living together anymore. This is out of that norm. This is in the bizarre category.
I'm surprised.
And strange. Go ahead.
I'm surprised she even gets what she gets or that she got what she got for seeing the children,
right.
period.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's definitely out of the norm. And what was his sister thinking, jumping right in the middle of that and saying, "I'm going to solve this"? It's almost like she had this rescuer thing going.
And I wonder, I mean, I don't think she's like a bad person. I'm not trying to criticize her. She really spoke, I think, with some vigor there about mm-hmm. she was a woman who needed some love. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a true statement, but she needed it. I don't know that she's capable of receiving it because mm-hmm. clearly that's been an issue for her most of her life. Mm-hmm. But if you're on the outside and you're kind of that empathetic person, you can easily get sucked into that. And I'm wondering if she got sucked into that pretty easily there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.